Mitzvah Kuf Nun, the 150th mitzvah, is very related to the mitzvahs that we've just been doing, which is Shelo Yikansu HaKohanim LaMikdash Kurei Begadim, that the Kohanim should not enter the Beis HaMikdash when their clothes are torn. So just like they're not allowed to have their hair grown too long because it doesn't look so nice, they're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash when their clothes are torn, which is also a sign of Avelos. Shelo Yikansu HaKohanim LaMikdash Kurei Begadim Shenamar Uvigdeichem Lo Sifromu. When God is talking to Nadav and Avihu, Elazar v'Isamar after Nadav and Avihu die, so he says that you should not rend your garments. In other words, they're supposed to be in Avelos, yet they should not rend their garments and enter the Beis HaMikdash. Perush al tikru b'gdeichem, v'nichbal meniyah zo b'kohen gadol. This is stated by the Kohen Gadol additionally, shenemar alav, uvgadav lo yifrom, that he should not tear his garments. So why did it say additionally that the Kohen Gadol may not tear his clothes in addition to the regular Kohanim who may not tear their clothes when they enter the Beis HaMikdash? Why? Then, so not only may the Kohen Gadol not enter the Beis HaMikdash in his rent garments, but he may not even tear Kriya, the normal Kriya that you do when you have a relative who dies, so he can't do that. Even when he's not going into the Beis HaMikdash, because as we pointed out, the Kohen Gadol is sort of like considered to be a fixture of the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore he could be in the Beis HaMikdash at any time, so he cannot have his garments rent at any point. No, in terms of regular halachos of Kriya, for tearing Kriya when a relative dies, tearing a tie is meaningless, because it has to be an actual garment. A tie is not really a garment. A tie is what we call a tachshit. It's an adornment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, if, you know, Chas v'Shalom, you do hear that one of the relatives, has died, should you attempt Kriya on your own, or should you get rabbinical counsel about how to do it?
You could, if you know the halachos, you could do it on your own. You don't need a rabbi to do it for you. But the rabbi is one of the rabbi's toolkits. Things in the rabbi's toolkit is a little knife that you make the little cut, so it helps the person, it breaks the weave, so it's easier to tear.
So very briefly, for example, a shirt like this would be,
that's counter.
I'm asking you. I'm asking him.
A shirt like that would be what?
In other words, if I were to go ahead and take a scissor and make a little cut and then do a tefach on a shirt.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Right, yeah, okay. You could do that, for sure.
All right.
But a tie is not a garment.
Ooh, then you could get off on it whether you
care. Well, of course you can wear a tie. That's excellent. But of course you can wear a tie on Shabbos when there's no air, because we have two categories of things that you're allowed to wear on Shabbos when they're outside when there's no Erev. One is a malbush, when it's an absolute garment, and the other is a tachshit, that's something normal that makes you look better and adds to your dignified dress. So pocket square is a little different, because a pocket square is what we call derech chutzah, that you're sitting in your pocket. Mm-hmm. So it could be that there might be shittas that would be allowed, but we would normally assume that you'd not be allowed. Right, but you would normally assume you'd not be allowed to wear a pocket square on Shabbos, even though it does enhance your appearance, because it's what we call derech chutzah, that it's sitting in your pocket as opposed to being worn or affixed here.
Yeah. Said you could, but
okay.
Yekka probably. They're allowed to.
Oh, the Yekkas don't. Yekkas do not wear pocket squares on Shabbos. They all wear pocket squares on Yantiv. They do. Yekkas wear pocket squares on Yantiv, but not on embroiderers. They wear pocket squares on Yantiv, but not on Shabbos, because of the Chashash Shahotzah. Right. It's actually funny, because the reason you're allowed to wear a tie is that it's a tachshit, it's an adornment, and not a full garment. So it was funny, because there's a story about the Brisker Rav's daughter, who was her father was suggested a shidduch for her, and he liked the bachur very much. I thought very highly of him. So he said to his daughter, "Would you like to go out with such and such a bachur?" His daughter said, "Absolutely not. He's mechal Shabbos." Rav said, "What? It's mechal Shabbos? What are you talking about? I know him. He's a wonderful bachur." So his daughter said, "I saw him once outside on Shabbos, and he had a stain on his tie. So if the tie has a stain on it, so it doesn't make you look good anymore. So it's no longer a tachshit. Now it's something that you're carrying. So he's mechal Shabbos."
So
I don't know if that's the truth. Is we don't that's not necessarily really true, because overall you look more strange if you walk outside. If you're expected to wear a tie, so it looks more strange if you don't wear a tie at all than if you wear a tie with a little spot on it. So presumably, even if the tie has
if the spot got on there in the course of you walking around, then you can't take it off and put it on.
You could if that were really the din. Then if something dropped from the sky and soiled your tie, you'd have to take it off and leave it on the street. Yeah. Why not? Mm-hmm. But that's not, we don't really, in other words, if the tie is completely stained up to the extent that it doesn't look normal to wear it at all, then yes, that would be a problem. But to have a little spot in it, we normally assume would not be a problem. V'amru b'sifra, in Torah's Kohanim, the Halachic Medrash on Vayikra, it says, Rosho lo yifra v'gadav lo yifrom, al meso k'derech shmei adam porim uformin al meseyen, ha-keitzad kohen gadol porim milamaton v'ahedyot milamalon. So the kohen gadol rips from the bottom, and the kohen hedyot rips from the top. So in other words, that's not the normal manner of ripping for a for when you have a death in the family. So therefore, the Kohen Hedyo can do it in a normal fashion, but the Kohen Gadol cannot do it, the Kriya, in the normal fashion. Okay, so Bishor Shei HaMitzvah, Kasu B'Priyas HaRosh HaKodim Lozeh. It's the same idea as the fact that you cannot grow your hair long when you go into the Beis HaMikdash because it doesn't look nice. We have to have what we call Hagdolas HaBayis. We have to have only the highest respect for the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore you're not allowed to go in a weird method of dress. But din pruei harosh ukrei begadim shavim b'chol dineihem. It's exactly the same halachos in terms of if you do the avoda with torn garments or with long hair, then the avoda is still okay. You did not. The worship in the Beis HaMikdash is still acceptable. However, you do receive the penalty of misa of divine death based on this.
So I gather from this that kriya then should be from the top. In other words, it should be somewhere like near your neck.
Yeah, it has to be. Down. Has to be around.
Tefach going down. Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's the regular kriya for avilus. Yeah. Fine. Midine hamitzvah, mashamar zichronim levracha, shechiyuv kriya zo, he shetiyah kemo kriya shekorin al hamitzim, that you're only liable for the violation of this mitzvah when you go to perform the worship in the Beis HaMikdash, when it's the normal method that you rip regarding dead people. You're somebody who dies in your family. Umina dome shehu tefach, that's a tefach. Chenomer b'moed katan, shein kriya pechusa mitefach, v'yaser brotem mevorim, and the rest of the halachos we all know, we learned moed katan, and we know that you have to rip a tefach, has to be over here by the top of your garment, and that's the type of ripping that you're actually liable to the penalty, even though we assume that we were not allowed, you really shouldn't go into Beis HaMikdash with even a smaller rip, because it's not so nice, but you're only liable to the penalties when you have this size rip. This is for male kohanim, v'over alei v'nichnas l'mikdash min ha-mizbech v'lifnim karua bigadim v'ovad, if you actually perform the service of the Beis HaMikdash, you're liable to divine death. If you go into the Beis HaMikdash and you don't perform the avoda, then you receive the normal penalty of lashes for the regular penalty for a negative commandment. And of course, that's Vizeo Ladasa Rambam Zichron Avracha. I pointed out in the last mitzvah, there's a difference of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban in this matter that the Ramban holds. Avaladasa Ramban Zichron Avracha. Ein Malkus Benichnas Lamikdash Karo Begadim. Just simply going into the Beis HaMikdash does not carry with it the penalty of Malkus. Shein Nisar HaKnisa Belo Avoda Ela Ma'ala Midivrehem. There was only the Rabbanan, it's only Rabbinic that they said that the Kohen can't even go in when he has long hair or torn clothes. Avalim Avad V'kuro Begadim Loka, but he would receive the penalty of lashes if he and the divine death, if he actually performed the Avoda. L'fima Shikasa B'Shem Balachos Gedolos, he's following here in the opinion of Balachos Gedolos, who's the earliest person who counts all the mitzvos that the Rambam was really taking issue with when he wrote his Sefer HaMitzvos. Mitzvah Kuf Nun Aleph, the 151st mitzvah, Shelo Yetzu HaKohanim Min HaMikdash B'Shas Avoda, that the Kohanim are not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash during the time of the worship. Shelo Yetzu HaKohanim Min HaMikdash B'Shas Avoda, Shedemar V'Pesach V'Amei Lo Seitzu Pentamusu, that this also carries with it a very severe penalty, that if they leave the Beis HaMikdash during the time that they are worshiping. V'nichbala maniyah zo kemo kein b'choen gadol is one of the prohibitions that is doubled, is repeated when it talks about the Kohen Gadol. V'amar min ha-mikdash lo yetzei, that he may not leave the Beis HaMikdash. L'so n'sifra o mi-pesach o amed yachol b'shas avoda v'shlo b'shas avoda. Tamalomar mi-hakdash lo yetzei v'lo yechal. So it's the sifra asked the question. The halachic medrash of Vikra says, what are we talking about? For a regular Kohen, at least, is it talking about any time he's not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash, or is just not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash while he's performing the avoda? So since it attaches, the pasuk says, "Min HaMikdash lo yetzei v'lo yechalal," he shouldn't leave the mikdash, and thereby he should not be desecrate his performance of the worship. Haviomer b'shas avoda. That's talking about during the time that he's actually performing the worship. He's not allowed to leave. kishemen mishcha sashem aleichem. Ein li el Aaron avanav shenim shechu b'shemen hamishcha shivitzu b'shas avoda chayav misa. It's talking, maybe it's only talking about the original priests, Aaron and his sons, who were anointed with the anointment oil. Minayin l'chol ha-kohanim shevedoros. How do you know that this prohibition applies to all the kohanim forever? Shneimar kishemen mishcha sashem aleichem. Where it's upon you. So this anointing is upon you, and therefore it applies to your descendants as well. The Chosav Hamatik B'Shem HaRambam Zichrono Levracha. It's interesting because he's quoting explicitly the Hebrew version of the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam. As we know, the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam was written in Arabic. And it's sort of like it was the art scroll book of its time, that it's written in the vernacular language. And then later in life, the Rambam actually expressed he regret that he wrote the Sefer HaMitzvos in Arabic, because he realized that, well, this is wonderful for all the Arabic-speaking Jews that they have it in their native language. It wasn't so nice to the European Jews who did not speak Arabic and they had to have translations, or he would have preferred that if they had read it in his original language. So he quotes this translation, who was the Rav Avram Chisdai, who was the one who translated the Sefer HaMitzvos into Arabic. So he says, he doesn't quote the Rambam directly, he says that he quotes the translator. The Kohen Gadol has an additional prohibition that he's not allowed to follow the bier, even if he has a relative who dies, so they're going in the funeral procession, so he's not allowed to follow the bier. Why? He's not allowed to leave the base of Mikdash. Even if one of the close relatives dies, he cannot go follow the casket, not the casket. What's it called? They didn't use caskets in those days. It was just like a stretcher, like they do in Israel now. They don't use coffins. They have just carry the dead body wrapped on a talus on top of a stretcher. They view. So he doesn't even, normally it's considered to be a big mitzvah to follow in the funeral procession to escort the dead to its final resting place. So in this case, the Kohen Gadol should not do that because he has to stay in the base of Mikdash. So this is an additional interesting facet of the worship of the Kohen Gadol that's different from the worship of a regular Kohen. The Chacham Ruzichron of Levracha and Masecha Sanhedrin, Amina Hamikdash Lo Yetze Velo Yechalel. Ha'achar shelo yetze chilel. Kolomer kohen hedyot she'ein ha'avoda muteres lo v'hu onen. So if he didn't leave the Beis HaMikdash under certain these circumstances, then the regular kohen would invalidate his worship. So what does that mean? Normally, when one of your close relatives dies, you have what's called the status of onen. Onen means that you're really supposed to be taking care of the burial preparation, so therefore you're exempt from all the positive commandments in the Torah. He wouldn't have to perform any of the positive commandments, but obviously you can't go, if you say, oh, I'm an onen, I can go eat a cheeseburger. I can't eat meat anyway, that's one of the other, obviously that doesn't work. The negative commandments are still enforced, you're not allowed to go steal and things like that. But you're not allowed to eat meat, you're not allowed to drink wine, because you're supposed to be focused on the burial preparations. There's a machlokas in the Rishonim. Actually, if this is an absolute halacha, even if you're not taking care of the burial preparations, or it's only practically speaking, you're taking care of the burial preparations. Rabbeinu Tam famously is quoted that he heard that his sister died in another town, so he did not maintain the prohibitions of onen on himself, because he said, I'm nowhere near my sister, her husband's going to take care of her burial arrangements, or the Chevra Kadisha in that town, so that's not relevant to me. There's no inyan of osik b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah. The reason you're exempt from the positive commands is that you're dealing with the commandment of taking care of the burial arrangements. So that, he says, that's not relevant to me because I'm not taking care of her burial arrangements, so I'm not an onin. But that's not the commonly assumed opinion. It didn't fly. We normally assume it's a technical halacha that if your close relative dies, you're supposed to be taking care of their burial arrangements, so even if you're not actually physically taking care of their burial arrangements.
No, you're pretty
preoccupied. So a Kohen Hedyot, a regular Kohen, is not allowed to perform the worship in the Beis HaMikdash when he is in a state of aninos, when he's an onen, and he is his recent relative, a close relative just recently died, and has not been buried yet. V'chach nisbar besof horios, ze ha'ikar. So this principle is explained in the end of Masechas Horios, Shekohen Hedyot Onein Lo Yavod. The Kohen Gadol Oved Vehu Onein. So the difference is that since the Kohen Gadol cannot leave the Beis HaMikdash at any point. So the whole type of aninus, this whole principle of aninus, does not apply to the Kohen Gadol. And the Kohen Gadol may continue to perform the worship, his worship, while he is in the status of aninus when he has a close relative who died. B'nei nizbar lach sh'amru hinei lo velo yechalel, samuhu shlilos velo minia. That this is not saying that it's not a prohibition. He should not leave the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore he may not desecrate his worship. It's telling you that he shouldn't leave the Beis HaMikdash, and connecting that to the desecrating his worship, meaning that if he stays, he has to stay in the Beis HaMikdash, but if he continues worshiping in that state of aninus, then it's no good. Lomar shelo tehei avodoso chulin v'afal pi shehu onin. So the Kohen Gadol, on the other hand, is not considered to be desecrated, even if he is in the status of aninus. Yeah. Mishor she hamitzvah hayesod habanu ilanu b'hagdolas habayis. I'm sorry, I missed the paragraph. Umin anira midivrei haramban zichrono lebracha ki usover ki lo yechalol eino shlilos. That the Ramban thinks that this message of lo yechal, he should not desecrate, is not a negative, not a negation, but rather it's a prohibition. Aval humenia la kohen gadol shnitzava shelo yetsa min hamikdash ripnei meso velo yechal al avodas Hashem yizbarach. So it's telling you that the kohen gadol may not leave while he's in onen, he must continue to perform the worship. Kichilul yehel avodas yanichena mesharis hagadol bishvil shum davar ba'olam. So this kohen gadol, even more than the regular kohanim, is the biggest person who's in charge of worship of God in the world. So other people, okay, so they're in onen, they have to stop, they're not going to daven. But somebody who's one person doesn't daven, it doesn't look like such a slap in the face to God, so to speak. This is how it's supposed to be. That person is in onen, you don't daven. But if the person who's in charge of the worship of God for the world, the high priest, he's not allowed to leave the worship of God for anything. Even for all these temporal, earthly things, such as death of a relative. There's no aninus, because on Shabbos, you can't take... Shabbos, you can't take care of the burial preparations, so there's no aninus on Shabbos. But then you get to a problem, which is once Shabbos is over, so how can you make Havdalah? You're not going to make Havdalah. So once then you make... the question is... Since you're exempt from making Havdalah on Saturday night because you're still an Onain, so let's say the person is buried on Sunday morning, you become now an Avil, you're starting Shiva, so are you allowed to make Havdalah now on Sunday morning? We know normally that if you, for some reason, don't make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, you can make it till Tuesday. But what does that mean? Does that mean that the Zman for Havdalah, that the time for Havdalah is until Tuesday? Or that until Tuesday, you can make up for Saturday night. Right. So if the pshat is that you are making up for Saturday night, then the onen can make Havdalah on Sunday morning after the burial because he was exempt from Havdalah on Saturday night, so there's nothing to make up for. But if the time for Havdalah is intrinsically until Tuesday, then the onen can make Havdalah on Sunday morning.
So what's the answer?
That we normally assume that the Zman is until Tuesday, so I believe we assume that that you would make Havdalah.
You can eat Saturday.
That's the same Shaila also when Tisha B'Av falls on Saturday night, Sunday, which it does this year, I believe, that there is an opinion in the Rishonim, the Ramban, I believe, that you don't make Havdalah on Motzei Tisha B'Av because you were exempt from Havdalah that week. So you just know there's nothing to make up for. But we don't pass like that, as we know. Same thing with the Onin, that you would make it. We assume that the Rizman really is until Tuesday, so therefore the Onin also would make Havdalah on... There's another suggestion given, by the way, is that the Onin should make Havdalah on Shabbos itself. We know you can make early Shabbos, so you can make Kiddush on Friday afternoon before Shabbos, quote-unquote, really starts. So a similar halacha tells you that in an emergency circumstances... You're actually allowed to make Havdalah, obviously, without the candle, because you obviously can't actually start doing Malacha until Shabbos is really over, but you could recite Havdalah before Shabbos is technically over in emergency circumstances. Obviously, it's much less wiggle room than in terms of making early Shabbos on Friday. So the question is, maybe the Onan should make Havdalah on Shabbos. So most Poskim are not so thrilled with that opinion. There's a very minority opinion that women are not obligated to hear Havdalah. But we don't Poskim like that. We assume that a woman does have to hear Havdalah.
And
can
also make it.
So that if the husband is an Onan, she would have to do it herself.
Correct. Yeah, so women have women don't like to make Havdalah themselves. It makes them nervous. So
yeah.
So, but technically, that's not the halacha. The halacha is that if a woman does not have a man from whom to hear havdalah, she has to make havdalah herself. Yeah. Look in the Ramban's commentary on the Torah if you want to see his whole analysis of the episode of Nadav and Avihu. So again, this is part of the idea that the Beis HaMikdash has to be the most respected and the wonderful place. You can't just go up and leave. So somebody who's actively in the worship of the Beis HaMikdash is going out, oh, I have to leave now. That's not correct. It's showing that there's something more important to him than worshiping God. Okay. So you have focus totally has to be on this, and if you go out, it shows you disrespect it. We could apply this to shul also. If you what?
Isn't that also the reason they don't like cell phones in the basement? Like you should be focused.
Right. So if you're sometimes there are emergencies, but if you're always running out to tend to your business during shul or davening or whatever. All right, when you're learning in the base measure, so that's it shows they have more important things to you than learning and davening. Dine ha-mitzvah, kigon mash amru rabbeseinu zichronim lebracha, shekohen head yed afal pi she'enu rashay latzeis vid ha-migdash v'shas avoda, kemo shedem ar pesach ha-omed yolo seitzu pentamusu min kamoko min meislo meish shehu roi lesabelov enu oved lefishu onin. So we have a little bit of an issue over here because we have a tension between the halacha that the Kohen Hedyot, a regular Kohen, is not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash while he's in the middle of performing the Avodah. But on the other hand, he's not allowed to perform the Avodah when he's in this status of Aninus. So what do? V'onei Aser B'Avodah. V'alfa Pisha Eino Oved. Hihuzar Shalolat Zeyzushu Misham Achet Tigomer Ha'Avodah Shahu Hayahu Osegba Min Hatam Shamardo. So what you're supposed to do if somebody informs the Kohen while he's in the middle of worship in the Beis HaMikdash, somebody says, this relative of yours died, so he becomes an Onain. He has to stop what he's doing right away. He cannot continue worshiping because he's now in the status of Onain, and he has somebody else takes over, but nevertheless, he has to sit quietly and watch, so to speak, until the worship, this particular worship is over, yeah. It shouldn't look like he's doing something just temporarily. He's doing the worship while he's texting or multitasking. He should be totally focused on what he's doing. He can't reduce his workload at all. The traditional interpretation of this pasuk is he has to continue to do it while he's in onin. Applies to mel kohanim avar v'yatza b'shas avoda loke. If he leaves the Beis HaMikdash when he's doing the worship, then he receives the penalty of lashes. Mitzvah Kufnun Beis is a very timely mitzvah, 152. Shelo lehikane shesuye yayin b'mikdash v'chein shelo yoresh asoid. Certain halachos that apply what somebody is allowed to do and not allowed to do when he or she is under the influence of alcohol, which is going to be a very important halacha to keep in mind come Thursday, which is the holiday of Purim, when there is a mitzvah of some sort to become intoxicated, although we pointed out, had a shir last year between Mincha Marava and Shabbos afternoon that I'm not in favor of getting completely drunk, but I do think that there is an idea. I am also not in favor of the idea that, no, there's no idea to get drunk on Purim at all, to drink alcohol on Purim at all, which I don't think is true either. V'shelo lehikane shasui b'mikdash. You cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash while you are intoxicated. V'chein shelo lehoros. And also, you are not allowed to deliver a psak halacha, a ruling in a matter of halacha, while under the influence of alcohol.
Good.
Does he tell you how much?
Yes. Kolomar midine haTorah baod yeheha adam shikor. You're not allowed to deal with any aspects of the Torah at all while you are drunk. Shenemar yain v'sheichar al tesh. You shall not drink wine or intoxicating beverages. Bevoachem elohel moed. When you come into the house of meeting. V'loshen haTalmud shasa revias al yora. The Gemara in Erevin tells us that if you drink a revias of wine, you may not deliver a halachic ruling, and a revias is?
4 ounces.
Oh, Mrs. Hirsch is machmir. She holds 4 ounces. No, I think it's less than 3 is the ikar. But anyway, so Veloshon... Oh, for this it would be a kula, yes. For this it would be a kula, but for Pesach and other times it would be a chumra, yeah. So you only talk about, maybe it's only wine, so what about other intoxicating things? Right. So it says v'sheichar, that's also anything intoxicating. So why does it say wine explicitly? Why does it say, if it wants to include all intoxicating beverages, so why does it say wine separately and intoxicating beverages separately? So the rest of the intoxicating things are only subject to a negative prohibition, and wine is the only one that's subject to divine death penalty. How do you know it's only during the time of worship? You and your sons. So even though we do have a rule from this as well, as we'll see in a second, that we derive from this, you're not allowed to administer a psak halacha. But that is not subject to the prohibition of Misa, of divine death penalty, that only applies to the worship in the Beis Hamikdash, even though we derive both halachos out from the same sources. On the same Gedaf in Erevin, yeah. The same Amud in Erevin, it talks about also not davening when you're drunk. Yeah, that's also another important halacha for...
Simchas Torah, you know.
Hopefully it should not be halacha for Simchas Torah, because you should not be drinking anything until the Suda, which is after davening on Simchas Torah.
However, I seem to remember in Yeshiva there was...
Yeah. In Yeshivas nowadays, they think Simchas Torah is Purim, so they feel that they have license to get drunk. Purim is Purim. Purim is supposed to be revelrous. Simchas Torah is not supposed to be revelrous in the same way. But again, Simchas Torah is Yantif, so you can drink wine during the meals. That's perfectly condoned, but not too much, but... Right, but during the having, I'm not in favor of having Kiddush before Musaf. You should finish your davening, you should have your Suda, you should not finish Simchas Torah at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. These are all, they turn Hakafos into the Iker, that they're so focused on Hakafos, they want to spend forever on Hakafos, they get starving, so they have Kiddush, and then once they have Kiddush before Musaf, so then they start drinking. Mm-hmm. The whole Seder Hayom is messed up. That's neither here nor there. But you're not supposed to daven on, that's true also, that you're not supposed to daven when you're under the influence of alcohol, and that applies also on Purim night. Night after Purim, when you have to make sure that you've sobered up from the drinking that you've done during the meal, which most people have in the afternoon, for this reason, that they want to have the longest span possible to have the meal. If you had the Purim meal in the morning, then you would have to sober up before Mincha. So they have Mincha, you daven Mincha at an early time, then you have a long entire afternoon, and then you can daven in Maariv if you want a couple hours into the night already. You can daven Maariv 10 p.m., so you have a ton of time to sober up. But then that makes sense. You have to make sure that before you do daven Maariv, you have to make sure that you're sober, yeah.
Yes.
Same measurement. The measurement for davening is not really subject to the same measurement. It's just if you were standing in front of the Queen of England and you feel that you could hold an intelligent conversation... While you're under your current level of alcohol, then you're allowed to daven. Have your wits about you, basically. Shorish hamitzvah yadua she'ein roi l'sasig b'dvarim ha'ikarim b'tachlis ha'yoker kibo inyoni ha'migdash v'divrei Torah rak b'eish she'yeh adam me'yusha b'dato mechuvan b'chol masav. So when you're dealing with such important things as the worship in the Beis HaMikdash and the paskening of halacha, so it's obviously not appropriate to have any alcohol interfere with those types of things. Ein laharich bedvarim shutim, anybody with some intelligence can figure this out, so I don't need to go on a whole long discussion of it. Medine ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Masha amr zichronim levracha, shekol kohen ha-kosher la-avoda im shasa yayin. Any kohen who is worthy to do the worship in the Beis HaMikdash, who is appropriate, hariz asur lo likanes min ha-mizbeach lifnim. You can't go into the farther into the past the altar. The avoda, in contrast to the previous halacha, where the previous two halachos ago, rather, that if you do perform worship in torn garments or with long hair, so the avoda is still good. If you perform worship under the influence of alcohol, then it's no good. So there, it's prohibited, although not with the same level of stringency, to enter the Beis HaMikdash proper, which starts with the Ezra, what we call the Ezra Sisrael, which is one level in from the Ezra's Nashim, and while you're under the influence of alcohol. Keshu shasu yayin o shikor o paru arosh derech nivol. So this applies also, again, we pointed this out, that the same idea would apply as the Kohanim not going in with long hair. So any of these halachos also apply to any Jew who's going into the Beis HaMikdash on a less stringent level, that it's inappropriate to enter the Beis HaMikdash while you have long hair or you are drunk in any manner. Kolomar shesayros rosho gedolim biyoser o karua begadim, meaning you have really long hair, you have or karua begadim, your clothes are torn in any way. That nazir problems, yeah. If ava pisha eino baz hara beisr yesh bedavar. There's not an actual negative commandment associated with it. It's still a prohibition. Veser eino elam mipnei kavod habayis. So just because of the honor of the Beis HaMikdash. Lefikach, because it's not actually tied into the technical halacha of the Kohanim, who are not allowed to go in with long hair. Lefikach Yisrael muter likanish sham besayros roshim begudolos yosrim yishol shim yom. So we don't have the same standard as the Kohanim. The Kohanim, as we know, are not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash with more than a 30 days growth of hair. So that does not apply to any Jew who's entering the Beis HaMikdash. So you're allowed to go in with more than 30 days growth of hair. Shein's and Nivol Eitzel B'nei Adam, the standard would be just the length of hair, manner of presentation of the hair that normal people would consider inappropriately long and disheveled. The Afal Pisha Kohanim Huzeru B'zeh L'Gadol K'dushasan V'Karvasan B'Veis HaBayis HaKadosh Sheroi Shelo Yehei Bahem Davar Yeser Klal Rakshu Kulam Yafim Amumim Bahem. So the Kohanim, so the Kohanim have a more stringent standard because they're supposed to be so beautiful and honorable when they perform the worship in the Beis HaMikdash to increase the honor of the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash. Ein shar kol adam begeder shalahem. The people are not held to the same standard. Rakshal yikansu sham besaris gedolim biyoser kamo shamayinu. They shouldn't just have really long hair when they go in. V'shir hayayin sheyishte ha'adam v'yaaser likanez la'mikdash alahoreis. What's the measure of wine that's prohibited? Who revius log shehu beitzo mechza. So the size of a revius is an egg and a half. So what's the size of an average egg?
Small, medium, large, jumbo.
Okay, so the size of an average egg we assume is approximately 50 milliliters. That's the volume of an average egg. Although in the ancient world it might have been a little bit smaller, but it's we talked about that in this year. Last year the Aaron Bullman Memorial Lecture was about this. We assume that the size of an average egg is about 50 milliliters, therefore a revius is about 75 millimeters, which is 1.5 times 50, and therefore a revius is approximately 2.6 ounces. The bigger shirim, again, we discussed back then what the reasoning is for that. But here, where it says chumra, it would be a kula to go with a bigger shirim, so we certainly have to go with a smaller shirim. V'sheyishte oso chai u'bevas achas. It can't be mixed with water. In the ancient days, they used to mix wine with water because wine was strong and they didn't like, they used to drink wine all the time, so they couldn't drink such strong wine, so they used to dilute it. It may be somewhat related to that. There is a chassidish custom, if you've gone to anyone with any chassidish leanings, that before Kiddush, they pour a couple of drops of water into the bottle of wine. It may be related to the ancient custom that you have to mix wine with water, otherwise it was considered to be unpalatable, but the reason they give is that according to Kabbalah, similar to what we discussed last time actually with Peis, that wine is considered to be, it represents Midas Hadin, that it represents the attribute of divine justice, and water represents the attribute of divine mercy. So if you mix a little bit of water into the wine, so you're going to sweeten lamate kadinim. So you sweeten a little bit the attribute of divine justice.
Why wouldn't they put a lot?
Presumably they don't want to put a lot because they're worried that nowadays the wines are not as strong, so no. If you put too much water, then it's going to make it not kosher anymore as wine. So if the shear is a revius, if, again, it's undiluted, and it has fermented for at least 40 days. Pater aval aser. So you're not allowed. Even if you drink just a little sip of diluted wine, you're not supposed to go into the Beis HaBikdash. Beinu mechalal avoda bechach. But that does not render your worship invalid. Shasa yoser mirevias min ayayin. But if you drink more than a revias, afal pi shehaya mazug, even though it was mixed with water, the afal pi shehifzik v'shasa mat mat, even though you drank it bit by bit, chayamiso posel avoda, because it's a greater shear than a revias, so you're subject to the prohibition, and the penalty, and your worship is no good. Haya shikr mishar hamashakrim. Let's say you became drunk based on other types of foods which render you cloud your judgment. Aser lihikanes lamigdash, you may not go into the base of migdash. Vimnichnas avad v'hu shikr mishar hamashakrim. But if you drank something else that was or consumed something else that made you intoxicated, afilu min hacholav o min hadvela, even milk. Even fig cakes. Others say tamar. Well, milk can make you think more cloudily. Right. Milk puts you to sleep. That's why your mother always said when you couldn't fall asleep and that you should drink a glass of warm milk. So, milk clouds your judgment. Also, probably maybe more people were lactose intolerant, then it was harder to digest. They couldn't think properly. Or if there's, let's say, a fruit that's been fermented a little bit, and even though it's not juiced, it's not the juice, it's the actual fruit itself, it's been fermented, so if you eat that, you're not allowed to go into Beis HaMikdash.
When actually you first see any mention of distilled beverage, alcohol, you think of the Arabs invented distillation, right? So you think that the...
Did
some point.
What?
That's a good question.
Yeah, alcohol. It's an Arabic word, isn't it?
Yeah, alcohol. Yeah, anything where it starts with.
Any word is al.
Yeah, pretty much. So this actually is interesting because there is an opinion. We know there is an opinion. For example, if you don't have wine for Havdalah, we don't assume this for Kiddush Friday night. Although there are opinions that it applies to Kiddush Friday night also, that if you don't have wine, you can make Kiddush on another beverage that is considered an important beverage in that time and place. If in the city, so hardly anybody drinks wine, people mostly drink beer or something like that, so you can make Havdalah or Kiddush Shabbos morning even on beer. So there is an opinion that this drink actually must be alcoholic, and it's not sufficient. For example, let's say everyone drinks orange juice, so the orange juice, you couldn't make Havdalah and orange juice, others disagree, whatever. But even according to the opinion that a beverage needs to be alcoholic in order to be considered what we call chamar medina, or the local wine. Mm-hmm. So some people have brought a proof from this that cholav, that milk, is considered to be intoxicating. That if milk is a normal beverage in that place, you can make Havdalah on milk. Grape juice, but grape juice has the status of wine completely. Grape juice is just on its way to becoming wine. So wine is the basic beverage. All the other stuff are just substitute beverages. That's a good point, yeah.
What is dvela again?
Dvela are like fig cakes. Hareza loke, vavadosak shera, but if you eat these things, the substitute intoxicating things, then your worship is still good. She'en chayav en misa el al hayayin v'shas avodah. It's only specifically wine that you are liable to the the divine death penalty. Ve'en mischaleles ela b'shikr min hayayin, the avoda is only considered to be invalid when you are drunk from wine specifically and not other intoxicating foods or beverages.